And now, a warrior for the Word of God and the Constitution of the United States, a Marine Corps veteran, a Harvard-trained attorney, Bishop of the Called Churches, and founder and president of STAND. Staying true to America's national destiny, the voice of the awakening, your host, Bishop E.W. Jackson.
Welcome to another edition of The Awakening on American Family Radio. I'm the host, Bishop E.W. Jackson. Thank you all so much for accessing this podcast and taking time to watch it. And by the way, if you ever want to communicate with me over anything I've said or anything you've heard, email me at ewjackson@ewjackson.com. That's ewjackson@ewjackson.com. Very simple to remember, very easy. Feel free, I'd love to hear from you. I want to thank all of you once again, as always, for all that you do to help make American Family Radio successful in getting the truth out. We couldn't do it without your support, your prayers, your help, your contributions. And God bless each and every one of you for all that you do to make it possible. Thank you for the kind notes and communications to me. I really do appreciate hearing from you. That's why I gave you my email address. Feel free to keep doing that. You know, we all need encouragement. And believe me, I am not so self-sufficient that having you encourage me is something I don't need. It helps me. I certainly do get plenty of discouragement from those who don't like what I stand for. So hearing from you is a blessing. So God bless you for it. Of course, we learn to encourage ourselves in the Lord, but I don't believe that that's God's ideal. You know, in that story of Ziklag, when David found that Ziklag had been overrun, their wives, their children were taken away, their materials were taken away, their property was taken away, but also their wives and their children. And David's men were so upset and so angry that they were ready to stone him. And the Bible says David encouraged himself in the Lord. Now, God bless David for having done that. We all have to do that. But I'll tell you what, I think God's ideal would have been for David's men to say, you know what, David, this is something terrible that happened. It's not your fault. It could have happened with any of us leading. Let's figure out what we're going to do next. We're still with you. But David didn't get that. He had to encourage himself in the Lord. So thank you all for not making the experiences of myself or any of the hosts on AFR Ziklag experiences in which the people are ready to stone us over some of the things that happen in our country. You know, it's not our fault. We're doing everything in our power to correct it and to make it right. So let's get right to it, shall we? What's going on in Minneapolis, folks? I keep talking about this over and over and over again because it's a never-ending saga, and it's a sad situation. Before I get into that in depth, let me pause and say, yesterday, if you're listening to this podcast on January 21st, then you know that Tuesday, January 20th, was the one-year anniversary of President Trump's inauguration. And he came on yesterday during the press briefing and just began to tout the accomplishments of his administration. And they are many and manifold. There is no question about that. I've said before, folks, in fact, I've said two things. One thing I've said is, having run for president, got no traction, of course, and the press, because I think the press intentionally, and sadly, the Republican establishment as well, intentionally ignored my candidacy because they knew that I would have a tremendous appeal to Christians and particularly and to solid conservatives, and they simply did not want me sort of, shall we say, being a fly in the ointment. I don't know to what extent that they wanted or expected President Trump to win, which I did. Even when I ran, I expected President Trump was going to win, but I was running because I wanted to bring God into the equation. I wanted to be able to say to people, you know, without God, America doesn't work. And so when I kicked off my campaign on July 14th, 7/14, calling attention to Chronicles, 2 Chronicles 7:14, which says, if my people, which are called by my name, will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, and I will hear from heaven and forgive their sin and will heal their land. I ran in obedience to the command of Almighty God to do so. I'm not even exactly sure myself how God might have used that, but I will say this. I will say this. I believe that President Trump makes a far better president than I would have been. Now, I'm just being honest with you, folks. I don't have any ego in this. I wasn't running because I'm breaking my arm to pat myself on the back. I really believe President Trump is a far better president than I would have been. I think that the experience of his first term put him in a position that would be head and shoulders, frankly, above anybody else who ran. And that includes me. And I think his accomplishments prove that. Now, I think God would have probably made a better president than anybody else who was running. But I don't believe I'd have made a better president than President Donald Trump is making right now. That's just an honest assessment of my own background, experiences, and abilities, and comparing them to President Trump having served a one term and having come back for an encore. I just think the man is doing a magnificent job. Not perfect. But my goodness, I just think he's head and shoulders above anything that anybody else would have been doing. So let's just run through a few numbers. I mean, when Biden was in office, the inflation got to almost 10%, but the overall inflation rate was 7% under Joe Biden. Right now, under Trump, it's 2%. You can't even begin to compare. I went to put gas in my car the other day and I realized gasoline is over $1 a gallon less under Trump than it was under Biden. And I drive a big truck, which I think holds about 25 gallons of gas. You can imagine, folks, every time I fill up, it was costing me $25 or more than it's costing me now. So, I mean, you just measure that out over the course of a year, you're spending hundreds of dollars on gasoline. Well, President Trump has corrected that. President Trump has taken a strong stand on DEI programs, which in my view undermine the meritocracy that is and should be America, where everyone is judged on the content of their character and the competence of their ability, period, period. And we're at a stage in our history now, in my view, where nothing else should matter. I think if we can ever get the kind of intellectual rejection of the left's specious view of life, and their Marxist view of life, I mean, we got to have equity. If we can ever get rid of that, then we can bring the country together around meritocracy. And the president's trying to do that. He's keeping men out of women's sports. The Doge was a massive attack on the level of out of control spending in the government and exposed that to us. And frankly, I really believe that Doge kind of influence what we're seeing in Minneapolis right now in exposing the massive amount of fraud that was taking place, primarily being engineered by the Somali community to the tune of what may now turn to be billions in the double digits. Our last number we heard was over 9 billion. We're now hearing estimates it may be higher than that. I mean, they were literally just absolutely not shoveling it out, not spooning it out, but they were taking it out by the truckload. The president, think of what he's done on diet, helping us to get back to natural foods, helping Americans. You know, I've always said this. America doesn't have a health care system. We have a sick care system. Now, we've got the best sick care system in the world, don't get me wrong. And praise God for it. Because if it weren't for that, a whole bunch of us would be dead who are alive right now. But it really is a sick care system. It's not a health care system. It's not a system that tries to encourage Americans to live healthy lifestyles. Now, there's been a lot of cultural emphasis on that, but it has not come out of the medical community, and doctors don't focus on that for the most part. They focus on trying to give you a drug to get you well or perform surgery to get you healed or whatever. But keeping you healthy by encouraging you to exercise, to eat the right foods and so forth, that's not part of our system at all. And the president is now introducing that, which I think has tremendous long-term benefits to the American people. Look, folks, the man is on a roll. There's no question about it. The man is on a roll. He has literally, not figuratively, literally closed the border. I have to admit, even I didn't expect that. I expected a significant reduction in border crossings. Because even I'm thinking, well, you can't really just shut the border because people are always going to find a way in. But I knew myself as a candidate, and I know now as a commentator, knew then as a commentator, if you can make the cost of coming across the border so onerous, and if you can diminish the likelihood that you can come here and stay with impunity, two things will happen. One is a lot of people will self-deport because they will know they'll never sleep another peaceful night in their lives because we're hunting them and we're looking for them and we're going to get them out of our country, number one. And number two, a lot of people will say, you know what? I'm not making a 1,000-mile trek or 100-mile trek or whatever it is to try to cross the border, knowing A, I probably won't get across because they'll apprehend me, and B, if I do get across, they'll find me and arrest me and put me in some sort of detention center until they can get me out. I don't need that. And that's both of those things have happened. Almost 2 million illegal aliens have self-deported in a year, almost 2 million. I believe that trend will continue as the president continues to tighten the screws. And they've gone literally months, folks, with zero border crossings. Zero. It's an amazing thing. It really is. It really is. And so this president is just on a roll. Look, the cost of groceries, they were up with Biden almost 7% overall, and they're increasing now with Donald Trump at a much, much, much slower pace, less than 2%. And my goodness, I already mentioned, you know, gasoline was, in some places, the cost of gasoline versus Trump's first term jumped almost 42%. I mean, just staggering amount. And of course, President Trump has gotten gas prices down significantly. In my particular case, I don't know what it's like for other people, but in my particular case, and I'm sure this is true probably for many, many people, I've seen gas prices down about 25%, my gas prices down about 25%. From literally almost $5 a gallon now to high threes, 380, something like that. I mean, that folks, that's significant. That's major. Now, are prices still too high? Yes, they are. Oh, by the way, on the border, we deported 650,000 people. So you put those two together, we are approaching having gotten nearly 3 million of the illegal aliens that came in under Biden. We've gotten nearly 3 million out of the country. Wow. I mean, that's amazing. And it's a great thing. And look, the president has completely revolutionized our international relations by introducing tariffs as part of his diplomatic strategy. I've never seen a president do that. And you know what we were told? If the president starts this, it's going to crash the stock market. It's going to destroy the economy. It's going to cause prices to soar. None of that happened. None of it. In fact, we are looking at hundreds of billions of dollars coming into the country because of investment as a result of his tariff policies. We are looking at significantly reduced trade deficits with other countries that have just been basically eating our lunch. And you know as a practical matter, what the trade deficit means. It means money flows out of our country. The net flow is out of our country into other countries. Other countries get richer while we get poor. And I have to admit, I was one of those classical conservatives who believed that free trade was always going to be better for us. The president has proved otherwise. So that's what I mean. I think he's a better president than any other person would have been, and that includes me, because I think he thinks out of the box. He's not a doctrinaire conservative as we think of them, with certain sort of principles that you just theoretically believe to be true, but have never really been tested. The president's tested him, because the president is not constricted by, I mean, he is broadly ideologically a conservative, but he's a populist conservative. And since he's not a politician, he basically wants to know empirically whether things work. Not just, oh, well, that's a conservative position. Oh, okay, fine. That's not enough for him. He wants to know empirically, do they work? So we've got a whole new view now. I've got a whole new view on tariffs now. I mean, I see that they have tremendous utility. And they are providing untold benefits. Folks, I really do predict, the last quarter, 4.3% growth. And this downright makes me angry, folks, to think about this. But I remember Barack Obama lecturing us about how we had to lower our expectations because he produced 1 to 1.5% growth for the most part. And that was realistic. We had to really lower our expectations. And what a putz. I mean, but that's because the man had no vision for America, and he had a Marxist vision for himself, but no real love or vision for America. And remember being lectured, manufacturing will never come back. Where the manufacturing going to come from? Here's an educated fool. We and I graduated from the same alma mater, but he drank the Kool-Aid and I didn't. I mean, even I knew you can get manufacturing back to America. You just have to change some policies and make it happen. We created policies that incentivized taking jobs out of our country and moving them to foreign countries, and President Trump reversed those policies. And now jobs are coming back. Manufacturing is coming back to our country. So, the president has got a lot to talk about. The media is not going to give him credit for it, but we, the American people, have to see through all of that and look for ourselves and analyze for ourselves. Now, is it perfect? No, because prices are still high. They're lower than they were, but they have not come down significantly, but they have stabilized. And in some cases, prices have come down. Look, when the cost of energy comes down, the price of everything comes down with it, because energy feeds everything else. Because everything else has to be flown, has to be transported, has to be created somehow. All of that takes energy. All of that. And so when the price of energy comes down, the price of everything comes down. And that's one of the things that the president said, and that also has worked. But of course, I know not everybody is feeling great about it. As I've said, personally, I've spent more money on some things that I would have spent if I had done it during his first term before the Biden inflation hit. And I wish I had now. I put off doing heating and new heating and cooling systems in our home, thinking that, well, it ain't broke, don't fix it. We'll let them run as long as they keep running. But, oh boy, what a mistake that was. Little did I know that Biden was going to step in and basically throw a little financial bomb into my life by just seeing the price of these things just, I mean, double, folks, double. Double under Biden. So I can't get that money back. And so I realize a lot of Americans are still feeling the pinch, but there's no question that we are on the right trajectory, and thank God for it. Now, having said that, let me add one thing, and then I want to talk some more about this whole Minneapolis situation. My profound concern is that we don't have what happened in America, what happened to us here in Virginia. And folks, I have to tell you, I am not in any way discouraged or disheartened. I am loaded for bear. We got a fight on our hands because Abigail Spinberger has just taken over as governor. And one of the first things she did was to reverse Governor Youngkin's executive order mandating that our state police work cooperatively with ICE to find illegal aliens, detain, and deport them. So that here in Virginia, under Governor Youngkin, if a local jail was holding, or the state police were holding an illegal alien, and ICE was looking for that person, rather than releasing ICE into the community and then releasing that person to the community and then having ICE have to go find that person and somehow apprehend that person out in the open square, they would just have the exchange right there in the prison. It's so much safer. It's safer for the illegal alien. It's safer for the ICE officers. But oh, no. That's not what the left wants. They want them released into the community, hoping somehow, I guess, that an ICE agent will be killed trying to apprehend the person, which, of course, is exactly what's come close to happening. And the likelihood is in these sanctuary states or cities will happen at some point along the way. I pray not, but folks, be ready for it, because I think it's practically inevitable unless these people change their policies. The legislature in Virginia is now controlled completely by Democrats, and they have already put forth, which Abigail Spanberger will sign, a vast array of new taxes that they intend to impose on the people of Virginia. Taxing stuff that's never been taxed before. They're going to actually start taxing, putting an additional tax on delivery costs. So, for example, you know, I'm not so much into it, but I know a lot of people who are now, you know, into DoorDash and all these other, you know, delivery services, where when they add a cost onto the delivery, the state of Virginia is now going to tax that added cost so that your delivery is now going to cost you more in Virginia because the state is going to add a tax to the cost of the delivery itself. Because, you know, the delivery is not part of the cost of the item, so the delivery wasn't taxed. Only the retail value of the item was taxed. No. Now, the delivery itself is going to be taxed. You know, Ronald Reagan used to say, boy, the motto of Democrats is, if it moves, tax it. Tax it and regulate it. And that's exactly what they started. And that's only the beginning. And by the way, I know Governor Youngkin. I'm not trying to imply that he and I are bosom buddies or anything, but I know him, met him, talked to him, spent time with him during the time that he was campaigning and at various events along the way. I was always a little bit hesitant in my support because of something I won't get into in terms of the way he positioned himself. You know, man's very, very wealthy, ran a company that actually paid Hillary Clinton $100,000 for a speaking engagement, actually gave money to the Southern Poverty Law Center, which is an enemy of the Christian community. I mean, they hate Christians. They hate Bible-believing Christians. I told you, as this podcast right now, from their perspective, is part of a hate system. Now, these people are nuts. They really are. They're full of demonic hatred, and we are full of the love of God. We pray for them. We don't hate them, but they hate us, and they label us as haters. They hate us, but they label us as haters. Because, you know, we don't go along with their sexual deviancy, we don't go along with their racial obsession, and we don't go along with all this crazy stuff they believe, because we are Christians. And the Bible teaches us to hate false ways. Psalm 119, 104, 125, both say the same thing. All your precepts concerning all things I consider to be right, therefore I hate every false way. Through your precepts I get wisdom. I hate every false way. I don't hate the people, Lord, but I hate the false way. We're supposed to, but they don't. Of course, they probably hate what we stand for, but they hate us too. Now, Governor Youngkin had contributed to that, but he claimed, his people claimed, well, that was his company, not him. And I just thought that was such a weaselly answer. And it kind of gave me a, you know, not the greatest feeling about him. But nevertheless, I met him. I personally liked him, found him to be willing to at least be open about his Christian faith and all of that. So that was a good thing. So, I mean, I didn't spend 4 years criticizing Governor Youngkin, don't get me wrong. The reason why I'm bringing this up now is, now that he's gone, pretty much everything he put in place has gone with him. That's what I'm concerned about for America, that when Donald Trump is gone, everything he's put in place will go with him. If we don't hold on to the House, we meaning conservatives, not just Republicans, but conservatives don't hold on to the House and hold on to the Senate and regain the presidency, this little cultural restoration, I'll call it a restoration, not a revolution, this little cultural restoration that we are having, folks, will dissipate like smoke. That's going to be a very, very sad day if that were to happen. It is happening here in Virginia, and I intend to spend the next 4 years reversing it with every fiber of my being. I mean, these people are going to unleash hell on the Commonwealth of Virginia. And every time I see Abigail Spinberger standing up, you know, making some stupid pronouncement like now, she's turning Virginia into Virginia is now officially a sanctuary state. Now, I said all that about Youngkin to say this. I in part blame him. Because it seems to me, if you become governor of the Commonwealth of Virginia, knowing you only have one term, one of your primary duties ought to be to make sure that you put together not only a policy apparatus. Now, he didn't control the legislature, so there wasn't a lot he could do there. He did a lot of things by executive order. I don't necessarily hold that against him. But, here's what I do hold against him. And I don't mean in a hateful way. You all understand that. I would say the same thing about any politician who does this. When I lived in Massachusetts, I saw Republicans do the same thing, which is fail to work to put together a political apparatus that could maintain the territory you have gained. So, to me, I just use myself as an example. Okay, I don't have any plans to run for governor of Virginia, folks, so please don't think I'm trying to, you know, be cute here. I'm not. I'm saying if I were governor of Virginia, I would see it as just as important a part of my job to see to it that the Republican Party of Virginia was working to establish an ongoing, well-oiled ground game, a machine, if you will, that could compete with the Democrat machine, because make no mistake, folks, the Democrats have a machine in Virginia. Well, why wouldn't they? I mean, I pointed this out before. The Democrats aren't buying votes, they're buying people. They're buying black people, they're buying illegal aliens, they're buying women, they're buying Hispanics, they're buying, I mean, they'll buy any people they can. They're still the party of human trafficking. They're still the party of human slavery. It's just got a new patina. It's more sophisticated now. It's more subtle, but it's the same thing. Whether you need this human property for votes to keep you in power, or you need this human property for riots to keep communities stirred up and angry and bitter and hateful and attacking ICE agents or claiming America's racist and, you know, America killed George Floyd, whatever it is. You've got a ready stable of slaves who are fully indoctrinated and fully trained, fully financed to get out there and pick your political cotton. Now, is that stark enough for you? Does that paint the picture? Because that's exactly what they're doing. They got a whole new set of slaves to pick a whole new crop of cotton. Only this crop is the crop of trying to turn girls into boys and boys into girls, trying to kill as many unborn babies as they can, trying to bring in a new crop of people, a new crop of slaves, in order to add them to their stable and also do their bidding, whether it's voting or creating public disturbances, riots, destroying property, threatening law enforcement, threatening ICE agents, and generally speaking, denouncing the United States of America. Now, let me just say this, folks. I go back to something very basic. Here's what the end game is. In order to fundamentally transform the United States of America to persuade enough people that it needs that, you must first delegitimize and discredit the United States of America as a legitimate sovereign nation. See, part of the reason for open borders is the underlying idea that, well, America's not legitimate anyway. What right do we have to have borders? We stole the land, stole it from the Mexicans, stole it from the Native Americans. You know, that whole mythology. We stole it. Who do we think we are to tell people they can't come here when we stole it from them in the first place? See, the left won't say this, but for many of them, the migration of Mexicans and other South Americans is really a matter of reclaiming what they, but in their view, was really already theirs until we stole it from them. Oh, yeah. See, America's not, in their view, a legitimate country. That's the whole thing of, well, we stole the land from the Native Americans, and they were busy stealing it from each other. At the point of an arrow, or whatever weapon they could use to destroy their enemy. They were enslaving each other before Europeans ever arrived. They were killing each other over land and territory before Europeans ever arrived. They were allying with each other to destroy other Native American tribes. I mean, this mythology of America and the Native Americans as a Garden of Eden until the Europeans arrived. And oh, they brought violence, and they brought bloodshed, and they brought slavery, and they I got news for you folks. The bloodshed, the violence, the slavery was happening long before Europeans ever got here. The Jamestown Massacre. Nobody wants to talk about that. In which I think the number is about 357 men, women, and children were slaughtered in a surprise attack by the Algonquins and some of their allied tribes. After having literally lured those settlers into a sense of peace and friendship with the purpose of killing them all. Yeah, that's your idyllic Garden of Eden Native Americans. And look, and I'm not trying to smear all Native Americans. There were tribes that were more peaceful and that wanted to get along, and there were others that were just as violent and as vicious as they could be. Now, I said all that to say, but the myth of delegitimizing America says, oh, no, no, it was Columbus. It was the Americans. I mean, it was the Europeans who came here, and they brought all this stuff. Nobody talks about this, folks. But did you know that the tuberculosis that ravaged many Americans came from Native Americans? We didn't bring tuberculosis to the Native Americans. They gave tuberculosis to the Americans. I mean, to the Europeans who came here. Now, yes, smallpox that came over from Europe, and the Native Americans had not developed an immune system. But look, folks, people act like the ships left Europe thinking, you know, we've got diseases that will kill the people who we are going to go settle among. So isn't that great? Anytime you have people who have been demographically isolated from each other and then are thrown into the mix together, that's going to be one of the phenomena that you could witness, which is that those diseases that one demographic has developed immunity for will be different than the diseases of the other demographic. And that mixture, that coming together, is going to create vulnerability among all parties for things that they have not yet developed immunity against because they haven't experienced it. Well, you know, you'd think like Europeans just packed up a great big old sack of smallpox and brought it to America to kill the natives. I mean, it just, and I'm not saying that people didn't take advantage of that wicked people, because wicked people will always take advantage of natural occurrences and events or of anything in order to carry out their wicked purposes. But folks, just to be clear, the Europeans were no more wicked than the natives who lived here. And at that time in the history of mankind, the Europeans were no more wrong in being willing to fight and kill for control over land than the natives who were here fighting and killing each other for control over land, because that was simply where history was at that time. And, you know, but look, folks, that's the game. The game is to delegitimize America. The ICE agents are like Gestapo. They're secret police. They are absconding with Americans, and they're putting them in concentration camps. And you come up with all this cockamamie nonsense. So that weak and uninformed minds will say, ooh, see what a bad country we are. Oh, we've got federal agents doing the work of the Nazi Gestapo. What are we going to do about it? Well, we can't just dismantle ICE. We got to dismantle the whole construct. The United States of America. We need something different. You might give it the same name, but it will have a completely it will no longer be a constitutional republic, either de jure or de facto, because what they want is a democracy, meaning that all we need to do is cobble together half plus one, and we can do whatever we want to do. You talk about running roughshod over the rights of people. You give these people the power that they crave, that they lust for, and you'll find out. We will find out just how respectful they are of individual liberty. And I can tell you, they're not at all. So part of this delegitimization means they completely disregard what the ICE agents are doing. Look, they've arrested 3,000 murderers, child rapists, gang members, sex offenders, some of the most violent repeat offenders in this country, there in Minneapolis, in that so-called sanctuary city and state. They've arrested 3,000 of these characters. And you got people out there protesting in the street like they're arresting Goldilocks. I mean, but that's because they don't consider the enforcement of America's federal law to be legitimate at all, because America is not legitimate. See, that's, and the stupid construct is they don't realize that that municipality, Minneapolis, that state, Minnesota, derived their legitimacy from the United States of America as a nation. We are a federalist society, if you will. And they derive their legitimacy and their existence because of the existence of our country. They don't exist apart from, separate from, independent of the United States of America. But yet they would posture that way and say, well, we're going to have our National Guard get involved, because we're of a different species than those flyover, redneck, Bible-thumping, gun-carrying, right-wing crazy Americans who actually think that enforcement of federal law is a legitimate activity of our government. We stand apart from those bozos. We're different. We're Minnesotans. You know, I listened to today Greg Bovino, who is heading up this ICE action, he and one of his deputies, talking about what they are doing. And he pointed out something I had not thought about before, but boy, it was a great point. He said, look, interior enforcement is part of border enforcement. And, you know, I mean, of course he's right, but I just never thought about it. He was saying you can't have border enforcement and not have interior enforcement, because knowing that some people will get across the border, you've got to have the ability to go out and go after those people. It is an inevitable extension of protecting the sovereignty of the United States of America, the sanctity, if you will, of our borders, and the safety of the American people. And Tim Walz and this guy Fry are acting like, I don't know what they're acting like. Like, again, they constantly say it. They're breaking the law. It's unconstitutional. What is it that they're doing? They were even asking Bovino at a press conference he held about,
What about the 911 calls coming through saying that the ICE agents are violating citizens' civil rights?
He said, well, look, if you tell citizens, if you see ICE agents doing their lawful duty, call 911. He said, that's what you get. So he said, they're abusing the 911 system so that people with legitimate concerns and problems can't even get through because you've got a bunch of people calling 911 to say, ICE agents are doing this, ICE agents are doing that. In other words, you're calling the police on the police. I guess they don't understand the supremacy clause, which means federal law, Trump state law. But I guess we've got a bunch of people who really want to relitigate the Civil War. A bunch of politicians, at least, like Waltz and Fry, who want to relitigate the Civil War. And the issue of whether states are sovereign and can defy federal law. Somebody needs to give them the memo. That issue's been resolved. They can't. They don't have the right to. They don't have the authority to. So, thank God for President Trump. Now, what we've got to do is just pray and work to be sure that what he is doing doesn't suffer an ignominious reversal when he leaves office. We've got to elect somebody like him. We've got to continue to stand up for right principles while he is president. And we've got to demand that at every turn, where it can happen, the policies that he is implementing are enshrined in legislation. You know, we need a federal civil rights law to protect the rights of minors from having their bodies mutilated. I mean, can you imagine? Folks, I tell you, again, some of this stuff just makes you... It's not hateful anger, it's righteous anger, cutting off the penises of some kid, of kids, who aren't, they're not old enough to be able to sign a contract, they're not old enough to be able to drink, they're not old enough to be able to smoke, in some cases they're not old enough to be able to drive, but we can cut off his penis, because, yeah, he clearly knows what he's doing in making that decision. It's insane. It's unconscionable. And it really is doing nothing but satisfying the lust of some of these perverse adults for power over people. That's all it's doing. And the collateral damage of years down the road when that kid realizes he really is a man, but he's lost his ability to do what men do, which is to father children. And that woman realizes she's not a man but a woman, but she's lost the ability to nurse her children, maybe lost the ability to have children. Where are all of the pediatric perverts and the power mad advocates of this insane policy to pick up the pieces of that person's life and say, well, yeah, you did something irreversible, but you just have to live with it now. You have to keep taking the drugs. You have to keep doing this, doing that. You have to deal with the pain. It is unconscionable, folks. You know, I don't have time to get into it now because I'm already out of time. But, you know, I've got some constitutional amendments that I'm proposing. And I think year 250th anniversary of our nation's history is the perfect time to see these constitutional amendments implemented. And if I had the resources, believe me, I would start a campaign myself. All we can do is now right now is put them out there. We will be talking more about them as we get closer to July 4th. And throughout this year, we'll be talking more about them. But the Constitution defining only two genders, the Constitution defining life as beginning at conception, the Constitution defining birthright citizenship as only a child born
to at least one biological parent that is an American, so that no matter where you're born, if you got a biological parent who is an American, you are an American. But if you don't have either parent who is biological parent who is an American, and you're born on American soil, you're just a citizen of wherever your parents come from. But that doesn't make you a citizen of America, because that's not what the 14th Amendment intended. So I have some, and of course, one that defines marriage as a union between one man and one woman. That seems to be the least popular, because the propaganda has convinced people that, oh, it's a fair thing, it's a compassionate thing. If a man or a woman can get married, why can't two men or two women get married? Because there's no such thing. That's why. Because there's no such thing. If they want to enter into some abominable contract together, fine. They can do that. They're free people. But to call it a marriage, that's nothing. Society should never buy into that, ever. A marriage is a sacred union created by Almighty God between one man and one woman for the purpose of procreation and the purpose of fulfillment of each other, because those two, Jesus said, would become one. And that's not just sexually. They complete each other. They complement each other. Two men can't do that for each other, and two women can't do that for each other, no matter what they say, and no matter how hard they might try. But again, I've got to quit. I'm way over my time. Listen, God bless each and every one of you. Let's keep praying for our country. I don't want what's happening in Virginia right now to happen in America when Donald Trump's no longer in office. So we've got to pray for the enshrinement of these policies that the president is pursuing, so that when he is no longer in office, they cannot be reversed. So that way, the cultural restoration that we're witnessing under President Trump can continue rather than being halted and ultimately reversed. God bless each and every one of you. I love you. I'm praying for you. Please pray for me. I do solicit your prayer sincerely. In the meantime, you all know what to do. Stand up, step up, speak up, and refuse to back up, because we cannot be defeated if we will not quit, because we are on God's side. God bless everybody.